This is the McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. I'm Kale McCann.
And I'm Jamie Morrow. We are professional dog trainers, members of Agility Team Canada, and together, we've been teaching dog agility for nearly 20 years.
Some nights after teaching classes, we'll spend hours talking about training, about our goals, and also some of the challenges we're facing and what we're going to do to conquer them.
And that's exactly what we're going to do in this podcast. Whether you're new to agility or competing at a world-class level, we're excited to have you listen in on our conversation.
So, let's head to the line.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the After Class Podcast. It's a great name.
It is a great name.
It's a great name. As we were listening to the intro, Jamie and I were both looking at each other and saying, what episode is this? But you know what's exciting about that? We've done enough of them now that we're losing track. So that's cool. I think it's episode like maybe 9 or 8.
Really? I thought it was 7.
Maybe it's 7, whatever.
We'll figure it out.
Be reading it, so it doesn't matter. But what does matter is today's topic is kind of a cool one. We have a great list of topics that we want to get to. And then this literally is something that we talked about after class last night.
Yes, we did.
And as we were getting into it, and I was like, we need to stop talking because this would be a perfect podcast topic. So today we want to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of running full sequences or full courses, like as if it's a test or as if you're like really trying to see what happens.
In it to win it.
Yeah. And we're also going to go over the fact that there is a time and place to do that. Like that's very helpful. But there's also a lot of cons or a lot of repercussions that happen with people who really just try to run sequence after sequence and they're not paying attention to the nitty-gritty stuff enough.
They let things go.
Yeah. And how that sometimes can create holes in your training, or it can also allow holes in your training to go on for much longer than they should.
Bigger issues become more chronic.
Chronic is a horrible word, and it is the best word to use. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. So one of the things that we try to do in our style of training and also with our students with coaching them as well is we really want everyone to have like a really clear criteria or expectation of what the dog should do in terms of like skills or behaviors within the sequence. So that when, because we do so much skill training, we do tons of skill training. When we have young dogs, we don't do a lot of sequencing. We do a lot of like little mini stuff. So the dog knows the individual things like how to turn, how to do throttles. They know their weave entries. They know how to turn off a contact. All of those things. They know how to.
And that's with one or two obstacles.
Exactly. Bypass equipment, whatever it might be. So that when we then start to put it in sequences, it comes together very quickly and easily.
Yes. But then when you also put it into a sequence, you can also see the little holes that kind of come up too.
Oh, can you ever? Things like, is your dog flanky or do they do a lot of chasing? Do they drop commitment because now you're adding more motion? Those types of things. And I find sometimes what happens is when people are starting to do sequencing, and it doesn't matter whether this is an inexperienced person or an experienced person, everyone does this, is they get so focused on running the sequence that, you know, if the dog does a wide turn or they drop commitment or whatever they might be, they come off the contact early or they miss a pull. Like they don't notice these things or they don't address those things.
They let the criteria go a little bit.
Yes. Once in a while, you know, it's maybe not that big of a deal, but if it's something that the dog is already lingering, like having an issue with, it's really not to your benefit to let those things go.
Because you're reinforcing it.
Yes. And I think part of it has to be you as a handler or trainer should really be aware of where your dog's at with things so that if you do run a sequence and like that thing rears its ugly head, you're like, okay, I got to get on this really quickly and do something about it. But I think sometimes it even starts with maybe people don't really even know that their dog has that issue. And then
they just focused on doing the sequence.
Yeah. And then they practice and practice and practice. And now they've had like 3 months of the dog's like flipping away from them instead of doing a wrap or whatever it might be. And then it's harder to fix. So I think having the expectation and having the mental picture of what you want your dog to do for each of the cues and the skills, I think is really important so that when you start putting it together, you can actually evaluate, yes, this is going well, or maybe this needs to be a little bit better. So what we thought we might talk about first is, so if we're running a sequence with our dog and it, you know, whatever, it's lengthy and there's several skills that are in it. And we are, so 95% of the time, I would say we run with like the
training.
In training mode. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So
not letting things go, focusing on tight turns, making sure that our dogs are maintaining their contact position. And that's just not holding. It's like maintaining the contact position.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Often, you do this, actually, we do this with each other quite often, but we also do with our students, like when they like go to the start line, we often ask them, what's your intention? Mm-hmm. What's your goal here?
Yep.
Like, what are you
looking? What are you focusing on?
Yeah.
Is there anything that you're concerned about? Is there an area that you maybe need to train a little bit?
Mm-hmm. So sometimes we'll, like if it's maybe a skill that we know that the person doesn't have down quite yet, we might even have them start in that section. And
warm up.
Yeah, warm up, rehearse that first. Yeah,
let the dog be successful rather than, you know, chance it and have the dog possibly be incorrect and being reinforced because they're so high in a sequence.
Build them up a little bit, exactly. Yeah. And then go from the beginning. Or vice versa, if they're starting at the beginning, you should go into the sequence or the course, whatever you're doing, with a game plan. If this happens, I will respond this way. If that happens, I will respond this way. That goes for correcting, and we'll get into what we mean by correcting, or rewarding.
Yes, exactly.
As well. It works both ways. Yep. Balance is so important. So maybe what we can talk about, like, so I know for me, my dog has pretty strong commitment, but one of the things that I'm always like on top of my dog about, and your dog actually turns better than my dog does, but
she has some other things.
Sometimes. So B, it doesn't always maintain super tight turns because she's a very fast dog and she's very high-minded. And sometimes I'm late and her wide turn is 100,000% my fault. And sometimes she just really freaking high and she's
wants
like,
to keep going.
Collections for losers.
Yes. It's faster not to collect.
Really. I mean, sometimes it is, but I would like for me to make that decision and not her.
Yeah.
So often when I'm running a course, I'm already aware of the certain areas on course where I suspect that I could possibly get a wide turn. And so when I get to that section, I'm already prepared with what I'm going to do if she does go wide. I'm either going to stop her or I might put nets out or I might pre-place
a toy.
Yep, something that helps her to be right. Or I'll go through the sequence. I'll see if she's right or wrong. And if I think that the turn's wide, I don't continue. To me, when I give you a collection cue on time and you're just being too high to collect, that's the same thing as breaking your contact or popping your poles.
Yep.
So I would stop and I would correct that. Now, when it comes to correcting things,
it's more of a fix.
Yeah, it's more of a fix. I think sometimes people have such a negative association with the word correct. I'm not like, you bad dog, you shouldn't turn wide. Absolutely not. It's more stopping her and then putting her in a position maybe like 10, 20 feet back from that jump that she was wide on. I would return to my original positional cue and then I would take a bit of speed out and I would give her her collection cue. And when she landed, I would praise her. And I don't always give her a toy. I might just, that's better. Good girl. And like build her up. I'm positive. I'm happy. I am not angry at her. But with some dogs, you need to be careful that if you've fixed something, I'm doing air quotes for those of you who are listening and not watching us. Sometimes people will
be quick to give the toy.
Yeah. They just want to reward everything.
And it kind of defeats the purpose.
And you have a really like high-minded dog. Mm-hmm. Some dogs or dog them patterns really easily. Then they'll go, okay, I go wide the first time. And then the second time you fix me and then I get rewarded. So they don't try. They don't try the first time.
Yeah, to put in the effort.
The other way you should think about it too is that if I leave her 20 feet from the jump and I take the motion out and she should collect at that point. That's great.
But you've made it so easy for her.
Exactly. So I'm going to praise her for that. But that's not what I asked her to do the first time. I asked her to give me collection when there's speed involved. So typically then I'll fix her, correct her. And then once I do that part of the sequence again, my biggest pet peeve with people is when they fix something, we've trained through a problem. The dog's like, yep, got it. I'm ready for this. They go through that section.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. It just makes my dog training brain like blow up. But the dog goes through. The dog does a brilliant part in that section. The person does a brilliant part in that section. And they
just,
I really want to say, the F word because I get so angry with this. But they just move on.
They just keep
going.
They
don't even say yes.
They're thinking again about the sequence and not about the skill. It's like when the dog pops the poles, you know, twice and then they finally get it right and you just keep going on.
People forget about dog training. They forget about molding and shaping your dog to know what's right. You don't even have to stop and reward them every single time, but at least
verbally recognizing, yes, good dog. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, that's my big bone of contention. So, you know, whatever, wide turns, we talked about that. And another thing that we often have to coach people on how to fix would be like if a dog knocks the bar. And we've done a jumping podcast. So if you want to know a little bit more about jumping, you should definitely check that particular podcast out. We go much deeper into it. But essentially, you know, every dog is different when it comes to jumping. So there's some dogs that you maybe shouldn't address the knock bars. And there's some dogs you must address the knock bar. Yeah. So
very high-minded dog. My dog was known for knocking bars. And I don't think that's a huge issue anymore. It does come up every once in a while. But I will stop her when a bar does fall to the ground because I'm just not going to let her continue on because continuing on is so rewarding for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You also have to evaluate like why they knocked it, but like even for us, like even if we're a little bit late or it's our fault,
I just want the dog to be a little bit more mindful.
Yeah,
and know that that's not okay.
No, exactly. We would never come down on the dog. We would just like, oops, let's just stop for a second.
Yeah, I'd put the bar back up, and then I'd go get the dog to jump over the jump again, and then I would try to put it in him with a little bit of speed and then reward her.
Yeah. And so what James just said is really important because what a lot of people do when they knock the bar is they'll go back, they set the bar, and then they go back to the beginning of the sequence.
But that's not the issue.
No, it is not.
And they're not
going
to know that was where the mistake happened.
What people need to remember with agility is a string of like a kabillion behaviors in a row from start to finish. So if you're doing a sequence of four or five obstacles even, and your dog makes a mistake at, you know, the fourth thing, and you stop them, but then you go back to number one, how is the dog to know to learn about number four.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really, really important. So if you have a dog that needs to be addressed for knock bars, you should stop them right then and there. You don't have to get mad or angry. Just stop them. For some of our high-minded dogs, we'll actually just ask them to lie down so they can't self-reward by flanking and circling around,
spinning,
running,
barking,
taking obstacles on their own.
Yeah.
We just stop them.
Calmly.
Yep. Lie down. Lift literally with that tone of voice. Hey, lie down. Just calm. Lift the bar up, have them hop back and forth. No toy, but yay, look at you with your dandy feet. Good job.
And no dangly toes.
No dangly toes. And then we would start the sequence again. But then when we get to number four, whatever that section is, we would acknowledge the jump. Especially, I love it when we see dogs, and that's, with our own dogs, but also we see our students' dogs because we're standing there and it's much easier to notice this when you're not running.
Yeah.
But when you see the dog like make such an
effort.
Yes, yeah, the next time around. Uh-huh. And it makes my heart hurt when people don't acknowledge it.
Sometimes I will just verbally praise and continue on.
Yeah.
But sometimes if I know it's an issue that comes up every once in a while and the dog really tried, I will absolutely stop and reward with a toy for that.
100%.
Or food, whatever the dog likes.
100%. Yeah, you always have to be on the lookout. Training mode, so that all of the little pieces are perfectly done so that when you put things together in a sequence, it's not as difficult.
Yeah.
And then I think the last sort of pet peeve issue that we find and, you know, our process of working through this is very similar to what we've already suggested is dropping commitment. So when a dog is like, you've asked your dog to do something, they're on their way to it and they like turn in front of the tunnel or they
want to chase
run
you.
Past the jump, chasing, too much handler focus, whatever the reason might be, like how to address that. And there's two things that I don't like about this that people do. So the dog doesn't have great commitment. And so they know this about the dog. So when they run their sequence, because they're trying to like get through the course, they babysit everything. Mm. Like they're like, okay, I know my dog doesn't have good commitment, so I'm going to stand at this jump for 10 years or I'm going to, and then they're late for the next thing. Or that makes you plateau, guys. Mm-hmm. If you don't ever try to
test the dog skill
or train it to that it's better, you are going to be running into every tunnel mouth for the rest of your life, which I don't, I mean, I don't want to do that. I don't think most people want to be running up to every single obstacle or like having to make sure that the dog like commits to that backside. We need to train the dog to do it on their own so that
you can run more confidently.
Yeah. Mm. When I send my dog to do something, I 100% believe she's going to do it. Because I know she is. I've trained her to do it. I believe that she'll do it, which means when I've then sent her to that thing, I believe she's going to do it. So I'm on to the next thing. I'm not dropping commitment, but I don't worry about
whether that job. You can run confidently to the next
part of the course. Be done or not. So commitment issues, how would we work it? So if you're doing like a reverse wrap, for example, and the dog like breaks commitment, or maybe they don't go in a tunnel, what's our process for correcting, fixing, drop commitment? So just for those of you inexperienced people maybe that don't really understand what commitment versus dropping commitment is. So in this case, when a dog decides to go to an obstacle and then they change their mind, that's what we're talking about specifically here, because some dogs don't go to a piece of equipment, but they never committed to it in the first place because maybe the person didn't cue it properly. What we're talking about specifically is when you've cued your dog to do something, they're literally within a foot of the obstacle, and then they pull off because they're
wanting to chase.
That's what we're specifically talking about right now.
I absolutely would not continue on. No. Making sure that you go back and you fix that specific obstacle.
Yeah. And how you fix it, there's a couple different ways. In our foundation training that we do with our dogs, we do a lot of like offering equipment. So for example, like if I was doing like a backside send, for example, like a German or something like that, that's a common one that dogs will drop commitment. Like they'll go to the proper side of the jump, but instead of taking the jump, they just chase the handler. So in that scenario, for example, we would stop our motion and then we would just pause for a second and we would wait for the dog. So basically we take out the piece of movement that's just like distracting the dog. So we were like, okay, fine, I'm not running then. And then as soon as they take the offer to take the jump, so we don't necessarily tell them to take the jump, we wait them there for
it's
them
more
to
shaping.
Offer.
Yeah, exactly. Shaping the.
And then we add the motion. So why this is beneficial is the dog just wants you to run so they can chase you. So basically what you're doing is saying, I will run, buddy. But that doesn't happen until you commit to the jump. So not only can you reward with throwing a toy back or whatever it might be, just the act of adding the motion is almost a sense of reward as well.
Yeah. And then also if the dog is continuing to struggle with something like that, then we would be utilizing aids to help, like nets or, you know, having a toy pre-placed. It just kind of depends. It's a bit dog dependent on what the issue is.
Yeah, totally. And then sometimes too, if a dog is really struggling with that particular section of the course with commitment, we would isolate that section and we would probably work that tunnel or work that jump, you know, for 4 or 5 reps and get several reps of rewards in before going back to the sequence. We don't, it depends on the dog.
And there's lots of times when you walk a sequence, you know immediately, your gut tells you, I might struggle with this section. This section I know is going to be difficult for me and my dog. So we will train that specific section and then try the sequence as a whole. There's always a piece. There's always a part.
Yeah. Yeah. I love doing that. I also do it if I know I really don't want to train for a long time that day, and not even like for time restraints or whatever, but just sort of thinking to myself, okay, I don't really want to do a ton of reps with my dog today. So I need to make this efficient
and successful.
Yeah. So I'm going to set her up. I'm going to show her the hard parts first, because usually if I do that and I do the sequence, she gets it right on the first try.
Exactly. And
versus
we do that
testing.
A lot in class. We will do a sequence and we're like, okay, is there a part in class that you're in this sequence that you think that is going to be challenging for your dog? Mm-hmm. So go out and practice that part and then go back to number one.
Train smarter, not harder, people.
Oh, I like it.
I love it too. Okay, so we talked about how we would fix a few things. Obviously, there's like a lot more scenarios, but I feel like that's a great a couple good tidbits for them. How many times would we allow our dog to be wrong in one go?
No more than 2.
Yep, we both agree on that.
Unless, sometimes less with a dog that maybe lacks
would
a bit of more. Yeah. Lack a little bit of confidence. Mm-hmm. I would maybe try it once and then, okay, well, you know, we need to train through this a little bit more and then let them be right more than they're wrong.
Yeah. So sometimes we find that when people are struggling with a certain section on the course and their dog makes a mistake or they make a mistake or whatever happens, they sometimes will set the dog up in the exact same spot. They'll lead out to the exact same spot, and then they'll try the suction again, and the dog will make the exact same mistake again. And then they're like, okay, well, I'm going to try it again. So they set the dog up in the exact same spot. They stand and like they don't
make it easier.
Any variables. Uh-huh. And now you've done four reps of wrong. And what happens when you repeat behaviors with dogs? Well, they learn that that's the way that you do it. Mm-hmm. And we see this happen.
Or like, they try with less confidence. Or they get frantic.
Yeah, they slow down. They stress higher. They stress low. So they'll slow down or they'll get more thoughtful. They'll get sticky and they don't want to go, or they get frustrated and they just.
And then you get frustrated.
Their brains turn off and they don't think.
Yeah.
Like weaves, for example, if dogs are popping poles, like people go back to the beginning and they try a bunch of times. And then sometimes what happens is the dogs just get so unbalanced with things that you're almost better to just put it away. But we don't like to do, especially with wee pulls, because it's very hard on your dog's body.
Exhausting.
But we might try twice and then throw a guide on in the problematic spot.
Yep.
Or
put them back where they made the mistake rather than going back to pull number one.
Yeah. Stick them in the last three pulls or whatever it might be. Or if it's an entry problem, we do a lot of just rewarding the entry.
Exactly.
Instead of having them do the whole pull. So, you know, where our minds are always thinking about how do I get the highest quality training I can in the least amount of repetitions. And not only is that great for your dog's body, but that's also the best way to train a dog because you are just setting them up for success and you're building them up. I want to be telling my dog, you're right, as much as I possibly can, because that's how she's going to do the job better. She's going to run faster.
Confidently.
She's going to trust me more. All of those things are going to happen. So, you know, two strikes and you're out. you're not actually out. But, you know, try it a couple times and then
make sure you change something to make it easier for the dog.
And make it dead easy. Like, if you just make it a little bit easier and still that doesn't fix it, make it dead. Make it impossible for them to be wrong. And then, you know, go back and make it a little harder. And then also.
But maybe not in that training session.
our brains are exactly the same. I was just going to say, or maybe pull the plug that day and come back the next day.
Get a win in and then kind of take a break, reevaluate.
Love that.
And then come back and try it again.
Yeah.
But easier.
Yeah. We're doing good. We're not going in order. Which I think is great because we're just sort of letting it flow. So let's talk about this next, though. There's a time when you should try to run it like a test. So we've been talking a lot about like training. Don't test your dog. But
your mental game needs a test every once in a while.
And also sometimes to evaluate like, where are you actually at? Do you have holes that you didn't know you had?
Prepping for a trial or event, it's important to be able to fight for it.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't go smoothly.
That's right. So if your dog turns the wrong way, or if you don't get, you know, if you're not ahead of your dog and you thought you were going to, like maybe you got to all of a sudden you got to switch to a rear cross.
Yeah.
Something. Can you
fix it on the fly?
Can you do that on the fly? Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's certainly important to do. Like Jamie said, for the mental game, that's really, really, really helpful. And it's a good thing to do. And it's something that we did in class with our students this week, which was, it was really fun, put them under some stress, is normally.
But you saw when we did this, the people's body language has changed.
Oh my God. As soon as we gave them the instructions, everyone was like doe-eyed and like, oh crap. So normally when we do our courses or sequences, we will walk the sequence with them. We'll go over all of the handling.
The benefits to certain.
Yep. Here's the possible problem that could happen here. So they already know what's going to happen before it happens. But ever so often, we won't give them handling advice and we will just have them walk and make their own decisions and then run it without feedback, which is really hard for us because it's so hard.
You want to help people.
You so want to help people so badly. But that's what we did this week. So everybody ran the course. And then once everybody went, we just sort of took note of the problem areas. And then we did the course walk together and talked about all the pros and cons of their choices. And then we ran it again. And of course, the second time out, they were freaking rock stars.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Lots of success.
Yeah, but you're right. When we did say, okay, guys, like, we're not going to help you this week. You're going to make your own decisions. And, like, let's see what happens. They were like,
wide-eyed.
Yeah.
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 You automatically saw the stress. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But it was a good test because, you know, now that things are open up, we're going to be starting to trial and putting a little bit more pressure on ourselves and our dogs and need to do it.
And you need to remember that, like, if you do. If you do something like this and maybe your run is a shit show. Maybe it is. That's okay. You need to then say, okay, I didn't realize I had this hole. And then you need to figure out what your game plan is for next. Like, is this problem something that's popped up a couple times now and that maybe you need to like reevaluate that mm-hmm. obstacle or that skill? Or is the problem because you weren't in a good mindset? It maybe has nothing to do with the dog. Maybe it's that you are just a little bit jittery or
rusty.
You're not confident mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. And that's something that you can work on. So it is really smart to run things as a test from time to time, but also make sure that that is the right choice for you and your dog. You know, if you mm-hmm. have a young dog that is still in the developmental stage, I wouldn't be doing a lot of testing.
No, or if you have a dog that has an ongoing issue of knocking bars or breaking contacts, you can never let those slide ever, or no. it's not going to get better. Especially
breaking contacts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Same with the start line.
Same with the start line, yeah. The other thing that we had mentioned before, because we were talking about being nitpicky, right? We were talking about like having a clear intention of what you're looking for from your dog. But I think that sometimes people can be like a little bit too like far gone with this. Like
perfectionist.
They can be like super hyper focused on wide turns or the dog nose tapping 100 times at the end of the or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the downsides to like being like that, have you seen?
Well, I think that it can affect the dogs negatively with their confidence, their speed. They just run a little bit more looking at the handler, not sure. Or it's the other way where they're super stim and they just try everything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I think you have to be realistic. Like, there are some times where, like, we're so crazy about, like, I see it a lot with, like, tight turns because people are just crazy about training tight turns mm-hmm. that sometimes they actually train their dog to be slower.
Yeah.
Because they're just so crazy about it.
Yeah, they put more strides in.
Yeah, a good trainer is somebody who knows when to let things go. And when
to let go,
to reel in mm-hmm. and say, okay, well, I'm not letting this fly. Like, we need to work through this because sometimes there's a time and place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That can be a hard thing to do. And that's why it's really helpful to train with a coach that is able to help you make that decision, because there's lots of times people will do something and then I can say, you know what? I'm not sure I would have done that there. I mm-hmm. think I would have let it go. Yeah. I think I would have just turned an eye on that
one. Or also recognizing something amazing and saying, hey, why didn't you reward your dog there? Yeah. Like, we've struggled with this in the past. Like, that was awesome.
Yes, 100%.
Sometimes students will just give us toys and they say, okay, if you see something, yes. You know, that's really great, feel free to reward. And I love doing that because, you know, I'm more focused on that. Where sometimes
I love how surprised some of the handlers are. They're running like through obstacles and they're like, where's my dog? I'm like, oh, that was an awesome turn. I rewarded it way back there. What were you looking at? Yeah. So I think, you know, really what we want you to take from today's podcast is thinking about like how you're training with your dog, and that 95% of the time you should be thinking about what you're getting from your dog when you're training in terms of their performance with things. Always think about evaluating your dog's strengths and weaknesses and figuring out where your holes are, so that
allowing more rights than wrongs.
Yes, setting them up to be more successful than not. And then, you know, knowing when to be nitpicky about things, so that all your whole agility career, you want to be growing and moving forward. I see so many people that they do really well and then they start to think about trialing all the time and doing sequences and blah, 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 blah. And then they plateau. Mm-hmm. And there's certain issues that the dog has. And then, like, you see them at a seminar, for example, or you see them at a competition, and like 6 months or a year later, they still have that same problem. They're still turning in front of tunnels. They're still missing contacts.
Knocking bars. And sometimes it's worse.
Yeah. And sometimes maybe you just don't know how to fix it, and like that's why it's not getting better. But sometimes it has to do with how you're training mm-hmm. and making different dog training decisions in order to get over that hump. Also, too, people don't like this advice, but sometimes you need to stop competing and trialing to fix something. Yes. If you have a problem that's coming up and your dog's continually doing this, stop testing them mm-hmm. until they're ready to be tested again.
Yeah. And maybe when you go back to trialing, you're doing it for not for competition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, like, the moment you stop worrying about running the sequence and course and you focus on, like, what's happening within the course – that's when you'll get better. everything, mental, mm-hmm. your mental side of things, the dog training, everything. But if all you care about is just getting through the course and that's your goal all of the time, you're going to miss things along the way. And it really, I guess, just depends on like what your goal is for your dog. Mm-hmm. Like maybe some people don't really care and they just want to go out and have fun and they don't care if their dogs, you know, get refusals sometimes and whatever. And that's totally fine. But if you're looking for like a higher level, like consistent,
competitive
dog, these little nitpicky things are something that you should be super aware of.
And focused on.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
Do we have any more magical words of wisdom?
I think there was a lot of wisdom in there.
I think there was a ton of wisdom in there. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed this podcast. We have a lot more on the way. If you are listening to us on Apple or Spotify or whatever, make sure you follow or subscribe to our podcast so that you get notified when new ones come out. We're trying now to get on a more regular schedule and post them every other Friday. If you haven't heard our last podcast, we had an amazing guest, Jaakko Swicknudi. He was on here from Finland. He's a longtime friend and unbelievable agility handler and coach, and he was just dropping knowledge bombs over and over and over again for like a two-part series. Thanks for hanging out with us, and as always, happy training. Make smart choices from your dogs, and train
more rights than wrong.
Yeah, train smarter, not harder. Bye.
Thanks for listening to our McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about us, check out the links in the show notes below. On that note, happy training.